Hello and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. I'm Margaret Katz-Kann, and today, rather than the usual, we've got something a little different for you. David Landulli is on some family duty today, but we are super fortunate to have the opportunity to have a guest and to have a very different conversation. So I'd like to introduce my guest. This is Jenny Mitchell. And hi, Jenny, how are you?
It's a pleasure to be here, Margaret.
Good, I'm so glad to have you. So, Jenny is the Chief Visionary Officer at Chavender, which rhymes with lavender. She is a dynamic speaker, an executive coach, a fundraising professional, and she hosts the Underdog Leadership Podcast. In addition, she's an author, and she took part in the book called Embracing Ambition, Empowering Women to Step Out, Be Seen, and Lead, which has been out in the world for about a year. And the book is a little bit unique in that it unites 12 exceptional women leaders with a common goal, which is to share their leadership stories as a mentorship resource for the next generation of women leaders. She lives in Ottawa, Canada, and we connected and realize that we both love the topics of leadership, people, and fundraising. So we thought we would just geek out on those things for a little bit. And specifically, though, we really wanted to talk about this concept of choice in leadership. So, Jenny, why this topic?
Oh, because I, having the experience that I've had in the sector, Margaret, I have seen so many us them situations, right? Where it's us the board, them the staff, us the organization, them the fundraisers. And it all comes down to this idea of choice, this idea of how you choose to show up for situations, what you choose to believe about yourself, and what you choose not to. And I think that element of choice, when it is present, gives people the personal resources and the capabilities to thrive. And I'm not saying that situations aren't challenging, but how you choose to interact with those situations can make a huge difference on, wait for it, your personal, but also your mental wellness. And I really think with a sector of what, 80% women, although that has not translated into the CEO suite or to the senior leadership suite in the not-for-profit sector, this is a conversation I want to have.
Awesome. Yeah, I know in my work with nonprofit leaders that us and them, between the staff and the board, between the CEO and the board, is really a it almost always comes up. And so let's dive in a little bit. Like, where does choice live for people who are feeling very us and them, do you think, with their
Yeah.
boards?
So I think part of choice, I'm watching my kids through this because I'm sort of asking myself this question: when did I realize I had more choice than I used to think? And I watch my kids, we sort of put them in these boxes. You put them in education structures, they're square and boxy, and we say you have to go to this class. I have one kid in university and I notice she's choosing to skip certain lectures. And I'll be honest, like every bone in my body, when she skips something, just I was the good student, right, Margaret? I followed the rules. I felt I didn't have as much choice, right? And somewhere along the lines, you realize that the structures that are set up are maybe not best serving you. And you either go into, I'll be honest, like I think we hit a point of depression where we get incredibly, depression literally means you have no choices. You're stuck in a corner
Right. You
and
feel like you have no
you
choice.
feel like you, like, thank you. You feel like you have no choices. So your mindset tells you that there is no options for you. And at that point, hopefully you have a good friend or a colleague or you seek some professional help. But that idea of choice is actually co-created with yourself. And I realized as I got older that I had way more choices than I thought I did, and that I had basically written my own map. And if I could write my own map, if I'd written my own map, I could write myself a new map. And I got really curious about that.
I remember at one point during a tricky period in my life when I was in a relationship that was really challenging me, and my best friend said, "Margaret, you always have choice. Like, even the poison dart to the neck, that's a choice."
Yeah.
And of course, I think of that all the time, A, because it makes me laugh, But I'm unlikely to send a poison dart anybody's way. But that choice actually to free yourself up by not ruling out a choice that you know you're not going to make, you really limit your creativity. So I
You
always include
do.
that one on the table. Like it's always a
Yeah.
choice. And what goes in the brainstorming about choices can be some things that you're pretty sure you're not going to do, but that you still let yourself feel like those are on the table as choices.
So two things. I love that example. So when I was parenting teenagers, one of the strategies we would use is provide options. And it was interesting because, of course, my option was I want you to go to school. It was always my option, right? But when we co-created the options together, it was amazing how many other options there were. And when people feel involved in the choices that are provided to them, their relationship with the choices changes, right? That was a really light bulb moment for me, this realization. And we always do have choice. Even choosing not is a choice. The
Right.
other thing I would say is, and this goes to leadership, my colleague Sherry in the business, she always talks about solution strategies instead of problem solving. And I think sometimes we get stuck in this problem solving. There's one right answer, there's one way that'll work. I either have to fire them or keep them. And I find when you frame things with problem solution, it's actually limiting by definition. And if you think of solution strategies, even the neuroscience is telling us that when you someone is put in crisis or in stress and duress to make a decision, they cannot access their prefrontal cortex the same way they can when we're considering possibilities, right? So you actually have better options when you think of it as solution strategies. Does that really resonate in your
It
world at
does.
all?
Yeah, what I love about that is sometimes there isn't a straight line from where you are to the solution to the problem. And when we are only looking way, way, way down that road, like how is this going to be fixed? Then we get kind of paralyzed, right? It's really hard. Whereas, looking for a strategy. Okay, what's one step I can make? What's one choice I can make? What's something that will move me from where I am now to a new space? Maybe someplace with a different, metaphoric lamp or a different light or a different, picture on the wall that's going to inspire me to then know, okay, after this jump, then there's another jump to something
Oh,
different.
you said one small step, right? So rather like that I often will say 1% better than the next day. If I can find a little bit better way to do my scheduling, find a little bit better way to do my grocery shopping, find a little bit of better way to communicate something challenging. That can be enough. There's this slide that I saw in my coaching practice when I was learning, and it was so simple and distilled that it left this huge impression for me on me. And I then posted it in my office, but any client I worked with, I would put it on the fridge in the lunchroom. And it was the difference between the judger and the learner. And I'm sure this will resonate with you. The judger says, "What's wrong?" Or how can I prove myself that I'm right? And the learner says, what are my truths here? What are my options? The judger says, why bother? No, but nothing changes
We
anyway.
already
That's my,
tried that and it
we
didn't
tried
work.
that. My perfect Eeyore, right? And then the learner says, where can we make a small change to your point, right?
And I'm taking this conversation, which I love, and I'm trying in my head to bring it back to what do we tell, our clients, our executive directors when they're just up to their eyeballs in frustration with their board? Like what, I'm just like, I would love to impart some wisdom or shared sense of, oh, you're not alone out there.
And I want to honor, I think that's probably one of the most challenging relationships, just to put it on the table. And I've now said it out loud, Margaret, and so everybody can pull this sound bite and hear it from me. And I work with a lot of boards, and I'm sure you do too. Why is it so challenging? Because people are people. You got nine people that want to do good, and you got one person, let's be honest, if it's an executive director or a CEO, that knows more on certain topics than the people that are in the position of power. Let's use that word. One of the hardest things to do as a leader is to assume positive intent. Very rarely are board members coming after you, you know, that us them we were talking about.
Right.
Very rarely, and it happens, and I really feel for those folks if they
Yeah,
are.
but it's not the norm.
They are most often seeking to understand, seeking to validate. They might have a certain expertise that they're hoping to impart. They may, let's be honest, they may doubt your competencies. But even if they doubt your competencies, they're not throwing you out under the bus. They're seeking to get clarification on something. And I find that's actually, as a leader, one of the hardest things to do is to slow down. Take a deep breath. Why am I singing? I don't know. It just feels like if I go sing-songy,
Right. You're gonna slow
right?
it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that 3 second rule, you know, one of my old rules was if somebody says something that's triggering or challenging for me, just to take a deep breath before I respond, because it slows down the communication.
Yeah.
And assuming, you know, until proven otherwise, they're not out to get you.
Yeah.
I describe it sometimes as mineral rights. What are they saying? But what do they actually mean? So they might be saying, well, you didn't give us enough time for the budget. They might be saying, I'm worried that we don't have enough buffer XYZ. But the mineral rights might be, I'm nervous. I'm anxious. I've never been on this board before. There's some things in this budget that I don't really agree with, but I don't know how to voice that. So if you
Yeah.
can seek to understand, I mean, we're both coaches, so I'm sure this is resonating with you, right?
It is. Yeah, and I'm just gonna list because I think in your talking you've actually I'd like to name three choices that that you've sort of identified. And the
Okay.
first is you choose to give other people best intent, right? When you are in a relationship with them, that's actually a choice. You can choose to
Love it.
feel like they're out to get you, or you can choose to give them best intent until they earn not to have it, right? But to start on that place. You can choose to take a breath and count to three or count to 10 or leave the room for 5 minutes, and when you know that you're losing it a little bit, or as you said, more appropriately, you're triggered, or that what's going to come out of your mouth doesn't serve the conversation, you can choose to take a moment. And now I've already forgotten the third one. It was
No,
what
and
you
I
were
think the
just
third one
saying.
was,
Yeah.
yeah, I was as you were speaking, the other choice is to bring your best self forward,
Yeah.
actually.
Yeah, that is another choice. And a choice that's related that I talk with people a lot about is this idea of it's actually when we choose to think that disagreeing is a disaster, we're in trouble. Right. When we choose to believe that we must agree about everything, that actually really lessens what I think is the philosophical point of having a board, which is actually to have different people who have different opinions. So if we choose to look for how we're aligned, if we choose to return to the mission, if we choose to look at what's the same instead of what's different, that sometimes that actually creates a container. Like we don't actually have to agree at the beginning about how to get there. Right? Like maybe that by having a lot of disagreement in the space that like again, it's a choice to think disagreement is not toxic, it can be toxic, but it's not fatal, right? That if we hold it in a container of like we all are looking at different ways to get to the same end place, and that that's worth actually talking about. So that's a place of
I
choice.
love that.
Yeah.
My working theory is in North America, we have too much space. So people can disagree and get away from each other. You know, if you're in
Right.
Europe and you're on top of, you know, apartments are closer, we're all, that's my working theory, because they are a lot more comfortable with discomfort and disagreeing. The other
Yeah.
way I sometimes think about it, and really, I think that's like endemic. And I wouldn't even say I've worked on conflict and I still think I'm okay. I think I get like a 5 out of 10, Margaret. We don't grow up learning how to manage conflict, and yet it's a major part of our work. So this disagreeable, I think about a triangle. If this helps me, it's not that me and the person are in conflict. The issue is actually what's in the middle. So we disagree about the issue, which makes it somehow less personal for me.
Right.
And that frees me up a little bit. And I, as a woman, I will also say I am still practicing being able to voice my opinion in a way that respects myself and that I feel heard, because my story, speaking of narratives, is that I'm not heard in certain rooms, which immediately makes me strident, nasal, not my best foot forward, because I'm already preparing for the worst, to be defensive. So that's something I also have to check when I get into rooms.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
So
I
there
don't
was,
even know what more to say than yeah.
well, yeah, you
Yes,
get it,
yes.
right? It's like
Yeah,
we
I
had
really
this
do.
moment, you and I, where we get it. We have to own our part. That is a choice.
Right.
Speaking.
Yeah, and there's a something in there that's a cousin of best intent, right? And it's almost like giving it to yourself. Right? And
I
sometimes
love that.
there's a choice to, what I would call front end load. Like, I'd like to say something into this room, and I may sound clunky or inelegant as I say it, or this is hard for me to say, or, just sometimes giving yourself out loud that compassion makes it easier, I think, to have truth come out of you, something that
Yeah.
feels truthful or authentic or that matters
It
in that
doesn't
way.
have to be perfect.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be polished. In the past, I think I had this very high expectation of how it was supposed to sound and look. And, just using the women's leadership research, we know, and I want to say this on as many podcasts as I can, because when I describe it to people, they're like, oh, that's why. So, women, and I'll say specifically women of color or visible minorities, what society does is that they create a smaller box of acceptance for them. So the behavior range that they're allowed is smaller. And because of that, that's why it always feels so incredibly uncomfortable. And yet, once we acknowledge that the box exists, haha, we have the choice to stay in the box or not. But at least we know what we're dealing with. I think that's also one of the challenges with choices, where when you don't know where you stand, or you aren't completely in alignment with what's most important to you in a situation, it's easy to get caught up in the passion and the emotion and the feelings in the room. I still do it. I still do it. But to have that, I call it the Juliet balcony, right? Be able to take yourself out and look like Juliet does down on the experience can provide you with some of that perspective and that positive intent that you might lose when you're in the messy middle.
Yeah. Sometimes we're having a conversation and suddenly we're like, how did we get here in this conversation?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
then there's a choice to actually be with that question. How did we get here?
Yeah.
Right? Instead of it being a description of what's wrong, have it be an actual question.
Yeah.
Where did we just twist and turn? Where did that plot twist just happen?
So the language, to also that the choices you have is to label it, right? That's another choice. I feel like we're at an impasse. I
Yeah.
feel like we're done for today. I feel like we're not coming closer to consensus, right? I never forget, we were in the middle of something and somebody in the group said, well, we're in the messy middle. I was like,
Yeah.
the messy middle? Really? Like, I just thought we weren't getting anywhere. I was like, I like the messy middle much better,
Yeah,
Margaret.
I like that too. When that space feels tight and right, when we are paralyzed because nobody knows how to get from where we are to where the answer is.
Yeah,
Right, we all
absolutely.
get frozen, and that sounds like the messy middle.
Yeah. And I think high achievers like to solve things. They like things to go away. And I learned along the way, especially with not-for-profits, which can be dysfunctional, is there are often things to be managed, not to be solved. And that even labeling it to be managed, there's somebody out there in this audience, Margaret, that's dropped their shoulders 2 inches.
Yeah. Oh,
Oh,
yeah. Whew, yeah.
like this is just something to be managed. Like they're never going to fix their grant application process. The portal's always going to be crap, XYZ, but it's just to be managed, not to be solved.
Yeah, I love that. And the choice, yeah, the choice is to name it. The choice is to
There's
accept,
another one.
right?
Yep.
Accept this is where we are today.
Yep. And I just want to say for our type A's out there, we are not soft coding this. This is not like sometimes I get the challenge from people, but are you jumping the mountains? Are you doing the thing, right? And I always say, coaching is really about figuring out what's most important to you so that you can jump higher and better and to the right mountains, to your point, Margaret, rather than just all the mountains. Because I was an all the mountains kind of gal before. I'm still in all the mountains. I would prefer to do all of them. I just am now a little older and I just can't bicycle so fast. So, choice, pick the mountains you're going to jump and consciously let go of the other ones, which is really challenging. If you've always been the person that's known everything up to a point, but you can't possibly know everything, you've got to choose where you put your time and energy.
There's so much overwhelm in the space, in the nonprofit space right now. And I love what you're saying because it is, sometimes what the choice looks like is what am I going to do first? Right? Like what am I going to start with? And it's not how am I ever going to get through this list?
And not all things are created equal. I had a client that used the term high value tasks, and I've stolen it from her. I love it.
We talk about high value treats for the dogs. Why
There
can't we
you
have high
go.
value tasks?
And often it's the thing that you, it's complicated. To your point earlier, you don't know quite how to start. It's kind of nebulous. It's like I need to develop a strategic plan. Like when I read that, I just blah. But if I reverse engineered it and I said, well, the first thing I need to do is figure out who needs to be involved, like break it into pieces so that we can feel this is sort of more productivity 101. But I'm always amazed that I actually can trick myself, Margaret. Speaking of choice, you can choose to have it paralyze you or push it off because you don't feel competent or you don't know the details. Or you can choose to take a chunk of it that feels manageable and work through it.
And for our strategic thinkers, the people who really do need everything laid out, you can make a choice to block off time for strategic thinking, to give yourself that number of hours, however often, once a week, once a month, to actually let your brain do what it wants to do and look at the problems the way that you, or the solutions, the way that feels organic to you.
So often we get tons of pushback on this, right? Let's just call a spade where people say, I just can't. My calendar is full. And I was one of those people, by the way. I just, and something that really helped me was I went through the executive coaching program and we did this self-assessment on different loads in our life. So there was the load of the environment, the load of our family, the load of relationships, the load of work. It was really interesting exercise and the load of time and energy. One of the things I realized was my perception of time was very, I don't want to say negative, but I always felt there wasn't enough time. And here I'm going to go a little woo-woo. Come with me, Margaret,
I'm
and
with you.
listeners, right? That my belief was there wasn't enough time for everything. And when I believe that, there isn't enough. It becomes proof positive, and that's a choice I'm making to believe that, and it reflects itself in my calendar. When I make the choice, and my new mantra that I created from that, the core belief was there's always enough time for the most important things. And I would just repeat it. And what it gave me was choice. I was like, oh, so I chose to play Friday afternoon tennis from 2 to 4. I chose that. And that actually is in the fun bucket. And yet I'm treating it like a negative because it's right now feeling like an albatross because I can't do XYZ. So I think there's a lot of games we play with ourselves to, what's the word? Divest ourselves of choices. It's happening to us. And I am just such a big believer in bringing back our personal leadership. Forget about everybody else's, your own leadership of yourself. And that has changed so much, myself about time is always, I've always been one of those people that races against the clock because I have terrible FOMO. I want to see everything and do everything.
There's a lot that you've talked about that I sort of want to double click on. And one of them is, I think there's always a conversation, especially in the nonprofit world, about scarcity mindset. And usually it's referring to money. We can't afford that, or we don't make enough to do da 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 da. But I truly believe that actually how we feel about money is really similar to how we feel about time. And so that feeling of there's not enough time is really parallel to there's not enough money, and it's a choice.
It
Now,
is.
it's not a choice in that you can automatically say like, okay, I'm not going to believe that anymore. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. It's something to work through, and I think there are some steps to help people step out of that mindset. But there are choices there that you don't know that you have. The other
I
thing that
love
you're talking,
that.
yeah, when you're talking about, tennis Fridays, there's also a relationship between high achievers and that we get into like a place of a lot of martyr energy, don't we? Do you see that all the time?
I
Like, if I'm
do.
having fun, I'm not a good person, right? Like the fact that I'm working 60 hours a week or 70 hours a week or even 50, right? Like it's, and I don't have time to do this, and I stopped exercising, and I don't read my children to sleep anymore, or just that maybe the choice is like, do you hear yourself?
I know.
Right?
I
To
know.
like, please, with love and compassion, can you listen to, to
Yeah.
the words that are coming out of your mouth here?
That is maybe the thing I worry the most about for the sector. And I'm gonna offer it in there's something called the drama triangle, and I'm gonna forget all the pieces, but there's the victim, there's the villain,
Victim, villain, and the, oh, wait, oh, I had it. The victim, the villain.
and the, well, it's the rescuer, basically, right? It's the person that swoops in.
Yes.
And the research, if you go back through psychological research, the villain is, I'm okay, you're not okay. The victim is, I'm not okay, you're okay. And the rescuer is, I'm okay, and you would be okay if I could, you just let me fix you.
Right.
So the rescuer is the archetypal profile of our sector.
It really is.
So we are doing it to ourselves. And what I often will say to people, so in that choice, one of the things you have to see is to see the situation differently. So that's what coaches do, right? When you think of the villain, you think of the, let's just stereotype him, right? The autocratic, top down, do it this way. We hate him, okay, or her. The rescuer is just as bad, but veiled in this sort of shiny, I'm seeing like confetti, but the outcome is the same, right? Everybody compensates for each other. Nobody stays in their lane. Everybody's exhausted and everybody resents them.
Right. And
It's actually the mirror.
the choice point there is not which end of the triangle, but it's like get out of the triangle.
I think the choice is, how is my behavior affecting myself and people around me? How am so one of the things I will say often is, and this just came out of a, like, how could I simplify all of this, Margaret? And my solution was, if I truly loved myself, what would I do? So you look at the day and you look at the meeting list or whatever it is, and it's like, and then the gala in the evening. I'm simplifying. If I truly loved myself, what would I do? I'd make a plan to have lunch. I'd make a plan to take a break because nobody can do that, right? If I truly loved myself, what would I do? Well, that board really isn't fueling me. I'm just an extra body on it. I really should, because we have lots of reasons why we stay on that board. I found that's to be the most simplest check-in when I am struggling to find myself, to choose for myself, because I'm really good at choosing for others.
And sometimes it's just as simple as what can I say yes to and what should I say no to, right?
There's a choice right there.
What do I want to say yes to and what do I choose to say no to?
There's this book called Language Changes Everything, or 12 Ways. I don't remember the exact title. Even the word need, I need to make this number of dollars a year. I need to go home. It's very disempowering, that word. You talked about scarcity mindset. I choose. How lucky am I? I'm not saying there isn't bumps in the road in all of our jobs, but how you relate to them and how you decide to show up really is the difference. And I'm going to use the example of the book. When I was soliciting the women to write their stories, I gave them the specific thing of, you've all had different experiences, you've all had challenges. I'm most interested in how you chose and what the steps were to overcome those challenges. To me, that's where the opportunity for learning from each other lies in, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where the, oh, that's what it felt like, or this is the things you thought about. That really normalizes it from a place of opportunity rather than the poor me and the martyr. And I just always get this crappy job and I always land in not for profits that have XYZ, right?
Right. Yeah. I love that. So we will put in the show notes where people can pick up the book if they're interested in learning more about this. And we like to finish our podcasts, Jenny, with something, an offering to our listeners and a reward if they've made it to this point in the podcast. So do you have a challenge or a request or something that you'd like to offer to people who are listening?
So I am going to invite them or a challenge to think at the beginning of any of their next things going on, might be meetings, might be conversations, to do the physical reminder of switching the lever from judger to learner. So it might be a talisman they hold on to or some sort of an effect, but it might just be when you sit down, you put your feet on the ground, bloop, learner. Just a reminder to yourself to recalibrate to that side. It is fascinating that when you change the way you think about the world changes around you. And often it's a matter of a lever, a small switch in the way you see the world. That I might leave as an invitation for everyone listening. It's simple to visualize, not so simple to execute on consistently.
Yeah, but you can choose to try.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jenny, for being our guest today. So appreciate your wisdom.
Well, thank you. And I have to say, I've been a listener of the podcast. I enjoy the discussions and the kind of one thing I like about this podcast is the pacing. You know, it's a reflection point. I hope your listeners have had a chance to kind of digest in bite size. And I would really invite them to take the time, you know, maybe you're listening in the car or whatever, to just jot some notes down, because that's where the change happens, right? Is the sustained support. So thank you for making that space, Margaret.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. So, to our listeners, go put it into practice. And we'll see you next time.